Hey SEOs and content marketers, say goodbye to crazy spreadsheet mashups and experience unprecedented connectivity between your SEO planning and reporting data. Introducing Audience Key, technology for keyword mapping, content brief automation, and rank tracking that form an SEO strategy system providing unparalleled feedback loops between planning, reporting, and optimization activities. Put your time and energy into strategy, not data upkeep. Visit audiencekey.com and apply for a free trial today.
Here on WMR.FM. It's the 12th of December, 2024. And if you look at the date properly, you have 12-12-24. 12 plus 12 is 24. This is a special day. Christine, it's Christine Chackinger from Sites Without Walls, by the way. Christine, it's a special day today.
What special day? I know it's a special day because two of my friends have birthdays. One of them, you know, Jenny.
Happy birthday, Jenny.
Jenny has us. She'll be on our show next week. No, but no, I don't know why it's a special day. Why is it a special day?
Look at the lower tray of your computer, the bottom corner, 12-12-24. 12 plus 12 equals 24. You don't see that every day. So that's pretty cool.
I have a Mac, and it's in the upper right, and it just says December 12th.
Well, you just have to look at it the right way, if you ask me.
It does. That's switched to 12-12.
Okay, this, by the way, me is Jim Hedger from Digital Always Media. This is Christine Chackinger from Sites Without Walls. This is the second last Webcology show of the year 2024. And next week we have a special year-end panel. We're still getting it together, but we do have two, like, totally confirmed guests. The aforementioned Jenny Hazlis, whose birthday it is today. Happy birthday again, Jenny. And Ryan Jones, right?
Yeah, Ryan is confirmed. He even blocked it out on his calendar.
Oh, my. Well, if he's blocked it out on his calendar, that means he can't set up for a meeting or something in that time.
Exactly. So definitely have Ryan.
Good for Ryan. And Ryan, on behalf of Christine, you're welcome, dude.
Yes.
Okay, so we're going to have a third, maybe a fourth panelist come in. Don't know. So we got the special panel edition coming up next week, recording next week. We also have a special interview coming out with the co-founder and CTO of the Duda content management platform, Amir Glatt. That should be coming out over the weekend, which is likely before this episode actually comes out. But look for the interview with Amir on, you know, anywhere you get this this fine podcast or any fine podcasting distribution service near you. Huh. Lastly, in our special announcements, you know, I think our sponsors, Audience Key and Wix Studio, without whom we probably wouldn't be sitting here doing this right now. So, thanks, folks.
Yes. Thank you, guys.
Okay, and, you know, one of the things that Audience Key and Wix Studio sponsor us for is because, you know, like, we're really wise and we can see the future just by knowing what happened in the past. And you heard it here on one of our episodes. When the November core update ended, we, of course, predicted there'd be a December core update. And guess what happened about an hour ago?
Oh, my gosh. Yes. 6 days later after the last one ended, we have a new core update.
So, you know, goodness rest ye, weary web workers, as, you know, Christmas time abates. You don't get to go home this year. I mean, you do, but you risk missing like something interesting, everything.
It'll run 2 weeks, which will pretty much put you at Christmas.
Yeah, 2 weeks from now is Christmas. The core update is going to run to or through Christmas. Yeah. They say it'll last 2 weeks, but who knows?
You never know. Last one was three. So, and something people should be aware of, why two in a row? So the core update is all the core ranking signals. So it means that they could be tweaking different things in the different updates. So you may have been fine in the last one and see effect this time. Or you may recover last time, but also recover this time because you fixed different things that were affected different ways by the different updates. So a core update is never a single thing. It's not the same update over and over again like some of the others are. So
now, before any of you take Christine's description and run with it, thinking these people are like mad scientists, like cackling over a bunch of beakers or keyboards or whatever, They are. That's exactly what they are.
No, I just think that they're trying to fix some things that have been wrong for a while. So we'll see what happens. You know, I was very happy with the last core update. My clients did very well. So I hope, cross fingers, that they last through this core update. Because again, could be targeting something different. So you always have to keep your eye out. And if you go down, then when it's all done, we'll talk about that later.
Yeah, well, you know, we just don't know what it is, boss. Every time we show it up over here, it falls down over there. And so we run over there, exactly. We show it up, and it falls down over here again. I don't know what to do. That's what I think is happening.
There's some of that. Also, there's been, like, weird flux after the update runs. But the clients have had that happen, too. Actually, there was something new wrong with the website that occurred during right before and during the time the core update was running. And they've already evaluated everything during that update. So this is the new evaluation, and when we fixed it, it came right back. So it wasn't like a continuation of the core, which I think people think it usually is. It's actually just probably something else going on with your site that Google's changing.
Well, I'm glad they're fixing stuff that happened either in the past or that they would like to see affected in the future. It's kind of cool when they can, you know, fix stuff that's happening in the present too, such as the indexing issue that Google was having, the on again, off again indexing issue that Google's been having. This one apparently has been resolved, but if you noticed your pages didn't get indexed as frequently as they should have in the last 24 to 48 hours, at least from the time this was recorded, this is probably why Google's been having a recurring indexing issue.
Yes, and one of the examples shown was NBC News. So it affected sites of all sizes. Oh, but everything's back into normal. Apparently it was very volatile, though, because I think Barry had 5 stories on it in the last week.
Yeah, well, so. You might also have noticed, along with their indexing issue, there was a major update to the way that they release information about what's in their index. The changes at Google Search Console happened, we got to see, like, up to the minute, so to speak, totally not, 24-hour data. We're going to talk about that in a few minutes, but I'm going to tell you, Christine, whenever they make changes at Search Console, there's a change. I don't think it's a coincidental myself, but that's just me. This should have been the top story this week, except there's another core update that just got released this hour, so, exactly. You know, we had to juggle this one.
About that first, yes.
This absolutely should have been the top story. Matt Mullewig appears to have rage quit the community Slack at WordPress after the courts ruled against him in Automattic and for his great rival, WP Engine.
Yes, they told him to restore WP Engine to the WordPress core, and Matt was not happy. But there's other things as well that they were told they had to do, like, oh, they had to stop blocking, disabling, or interfering with WP Engine and its employees, users, customers, partners, access to WordPress.org, interfering WP Engine's control over and access to plugins, extensions, or directory listings hosted on WordPress.org is a bad thing. They can't do that anymore either. And that were any of these that were developed and published by WP Engine definitely cannot be touched. So Matt got very mad. And he posted, like you said, he posted on, I believe what I'm looking at Slack, but it could be Discord. He posted, now his name is gone now in there. It's not Matt.
He's gone, it appears.
Yes. It's hard to imagine wanting to continue working on WordPress after this. I'm sick and disgusted to be legally compelled to provide free labor to an organization as parasitic and exploitive as WP Engine. We have gone over in the past year, and I have the many things at WordPress. WP Engine is done to contribute. Matt just doesn't count any of that stuff. So they're not doing nothing. So anyway, like they sponsored WordCamps and they lended, is that right? they're developers to help with the core. He doesn't count any of that stuff. He only counts like a certain thing and so he's mad. So anyways, someone answered him. I think we have all substantial emotional responses to this finding. However it goes, these are the breaks. The project continues, and so do we. Gone wrote, Matt, I hope you get all what you and WP Engine wanted. So he also went to the Discord and asked them to remove him there, and I think he changed his name to Gone there as well. Yeah. So,
I don't read a lot of court decisions, and the very few I do read, in none of them have I ever seen the word douche bro used so frequently. Yep. Okay, so Matt Mullywig has quite possibly left the building, taken his keyboard and gone home. That's extraordinary outcome.
Yeah, since he's the only one who actually runs it all, it's hard to know. The court said in a one sentence segment that kind of encapsulates it all. Defendants counter with four arguments. None are persuasive. So yeah, so WP Engine won this one. I think that's probably the right finding from what I know of the situation.
Well, and the red defendant? I thought it said douche bro. Oh, I read that wrong. Oh my god.
Yeah, pretty much. It's been pretty bad. So we'll see what happens. I mean, he told it, you know, he told WP Engine that he was gonna do what he did to them, and the courts disagreed with what he did. So now he has to give it back to them legally. And we'll see if he leaves. I think for a lot of people in the WordPress community, they'd actually be pretty happy if he moved on and just gave it to somebody else to
or maybe run. not somebody else, perhaps a legal business entity or a legal nonprofit foundation, or maybe both, as the structure was supposed to be set up for, like, originally.
Exactly. Yeah, that's what I mean. You know, maybe like a group of the WordPress core people get together and they're, you know, able to take it over or something. But anyway, right now, WordPress, the leader of WordPress, the one who owns it, rage quit. And we'll see what happens next. And
you know, we know personally three or four of those core WordPress persons. So we should probably get on finding out about, you know, what's going down there. Okay. So this next story, when I first read it, the only thing I can think of is goose meat gandered, you know, like, remember when Google was like just shutting everybody out of its market because it was so damn big, like, I don't know, sometime in the summer. Google's telling the FTC that Microsoft's OpenAI deal is killing AI competition because Microsoft is, of course, gatekeeping OpenAI and, you know, keeps all that good stuff to itself. It doesn't let Google have none of it, even though Google has Gemini 2.0, which we're going to be talking about a little bit later. But Google's telling the FTC that Microsoft and its, you know, big pants full of OpenAI is, you know, killing competition in the AI market. Meat gandered.
Ars Technica reported that Google reportedly wants the U.S. Federal Trade Commission, FTC, to end Microsoft's exclusive cloud deal with OpenAI that requires anyone wanting access to OpenAI's models to go through Microsoft servers. Are Google's models open? Is that something I missed? So they're hoping that the next administration will end this case, but right now they are Google's taking on Microsoft for being too closed and controlling the market. And they kind of are, but Google is too, so I'm not really sure the difference.
Okay, so here's what it confuses me. Google has the most incredible technology in the world, better even than the stuff that's being run at OpenAI, and very likely better than the stuff that's being run at Apple. Google, honest to goodness, I mean, you've created the Willow chip, the quantum chip that Google just produced. Like, oh my gosh. Google created the entire field that OpenAI is running amok through. OpenAI came to the public and said, hey, give me $20 and you can use me. And so everybody gave them $20 and suddenly they're the biggest things in sliced bread, pushing everybody who enabled them up around them. Except Microsoft, Bing, of course, but that's another story. that's a weird anomaly, you know, and it always has been. And now Google, who, you know, pretty much did the same thing when they lifted paid ads from, you know, like Overture and Yahoo, like years and years and years ago, and then pushed everybody out of that market by being so damn big.
The interesting thing about this, though, is OpenAI may want out of the deal, too. because OpenAI initially agreed to the exclusive deal as a condition of receiving $13 billion in Microsoft funding. But the company has been frustrated by the limited amount of servers that the startup gets from Microsoft. So they're tied to Microsoft, but Microsoft just declared them a competitor earlier this year, we know. So they're not giving them as much as OpenAI would like to have, and they can't go elsewhere. So we'll see what happens, but I have a feeling there'll be more coming to the story.
Well, everybody might want to be nice to OpenAI for a little bit because OpenAI just released the video generation tool Sora into the public market.
Yeah, it's still not everyone can access it yet. It's still limited, but yeah, it's their new type text and get video
get movie
software. Yeah, get movie software. So it'll debut to the U.S. users as well as to most countries internationally. They said later today. That was yesterday. So hopefully it's accessible, but I read other places it wasn't quite ready yet. So anyways, there is a new video tool from OpenAI for you to check out. I've seen some of the reviews of it have been decent. You know, people aren't like the first one where everyone's like, oh my gosh, this is amazing. You know, but they are saying there are definite improvements. So we'll see what happens.
Do you ever see like really cool stop motion animation cartoons? I don't know, like Gumby or Davy and Goliath, Pengu, or etc. That's kind of what I imagine being a prompt engineer is like. Go sit. Sit at 3/4 angle. Sit at 1/2 angle. Sit at 1/4 angle. Sit.
It's actually pretty. It's much more fluid than that. But the results are still, you know, generated results. So they're good, but nobody's going, oh my gosh, this is an amazing improvement. So from what I've seen, I've read critics so far. They're like, yeah, it's, you know, it's good. It's better, but we're not head over heels. So we'll see what happens.
Okay. So everything has AI in it. Like everything. The can of beans has AI in it somehow. No idea how they get AI into that can of beans.
In the crop,
how
they
got
the
it's in there. Well, they cook it in, right? With love.
And yeah, there you go. AI in the bean sauce.
So Salesforce CEO Mark Bernhoff, who incidentally put AI all over Salesforce like in the last couple of years, is now suggesting that the massive spending in AI from big tech is probably money well wasted. He did an interview with Kara Swisher the other day and suggested that billions and billions that are being thrown into AI from the tech world is money being burned.
Yeah, and I kind of like his take on it. He goes, he'll let them burn the money. He'll just use what they have. So this is from Fortune. A quote from him, I think they're going to keep spending and it's going to be expensive for them and it's going to drive their margins down, he said during the podcast with Swisher. I'm going to take advantage of the spending to make my products better and lower costs and easier for my customers, but he is not going to invest in it. And there is, we know, like a debate back and forth, you know, of like where this tech is going to go. And there are a lot of, you know, arguments on the side to say it is too expensive. It's not going to go down. They're never going to make the money back. So maybe it's not a great pathway to go down. But, you know, that seems to be Benoff's path. We'll see. But he said that he originally criticized Microsoft Copilot, which he called Clippy 2.0, which they really missed a marketing opportunity there. They had called it Clippy 2.0. Every Gen X or an older millennial would have been on it. But in reference to the virtual assistant, he says that many of the customers were disappointed because they're not getting the accuracy and the response that they wanted, and he's not wrong. So
he's not. The thing that frustrates me most about the way AI has been introduced to the world is it was super hyped for the wrong things, all the wrong stuff.
It's the most money ever spent with no market research.
Yeah,
there was no market research. They just threw it out in the market and thought people would think it's so cool they would just adopt it. And that didn't happen.
Here's the weird thing.
Think
of so many of the products that have come out there before Christine, like everything from MySpace to Blue Sky, which we're going to be talking about in just a few moments, and everything in between. The creators had a vision. They knew what they were making and what they wanted people to do with it, And once they introduced it to the real world, the users did whatever the hell they wanted to do with it, and exactly. often changed the nature of those products profoundly. But as the market will often speak, made it better because this is what the market wanted.
Yes, there's always a pivot in every startup, like no matter how big the startup starts out as. And, you know, unfortunately, they just they spent so much money and now they're locked in that space, right? Like they're all just they're building nuclear power plants, you know, Google, Bing, yeah. Microsoft, Meta. And I kind of like his idea. He is using Gemini. He says in the Salesforce Agentforce, you know, he's using what they're producing, but he's not making their company rely on it as a core offering of their product. You know, they're going to, if all went away tomorrow, he could still just go back to what he was doing before. And he's not spending tons of money on it. I think actually, given who his company is, I think that's a smart move for Salesforce.
It's really weird. We got to research this. Like we got to come back to the audience on this one, because I'm positive I read a couple of years ago that Baranoff was investing tons and tons of money in AI, and maybe they did for a while and thought, "Wow, we're actually not going to do this." I'm positive I read somewhere that they were all in on it.
I'm pretty sure we covered that when it first came out. I think they were going to do that, but he says they do train internally, and they're just trying to avoid too much AI spending. And I don't think he needs to do it, because you have so much money being spent, you know, by the big ones. That why does sure. he need to spend it too? He doesn't need to enter the race, right? He just needs to use the products to help his company. So he's even using like the servers from Amazon and Microsoft instead of like using their own. So yeah, I think it's a smart way for a company his size to approach AI. You know, don't make their company rely on it, but it's helpful right now. And sure. They're not spending tons on their AI costs, but they're using it where it helps. So
this is a kind of neat story. And in some ways, when I first looked at it, I thought maybe, you know, somebody's AI was hallucinating when they wrote it. But apparently, Apple AI and Google are and ChatGPT are going to be all working together. Apple Visual Intelligence is out. It's got ChatGPT and Google integration in it. That's in a way kind of cool. Does that suggest that Apple's also pulling the Salesforce sort of move and letting other people heft the bill on the cost of developing AIs?
Yeah, I think so, because Apple hasn't been really big on developing their own AI, and they've been criticized heavily for it. But it just makes sense right now. If these companies are spending so much money, I mean, they're building nuclear reactors, and the industry has to make $860 billion a year just to break even. I wouldn't want to get in that game at this point. Like early on, you didn't know all that, but, and those companies that have invested are locked in, right? They're, you know, the sunk cost fallacy. But in this case, they're probably being pretty smart. The funny thing is though, as a Android Samsung user, when I see all the features that they're getting, like translate text between languages, detect phone numbers and email addresses, I've already had that for a while. So this is how it goes when my iPhone gets an update. But it's good. They have Google Lens now. They call it camera control instead of Google Lens. And ChatGPT's problem solving skills for, you know, interpreting like math equations and things of that nature. So I think it's a good idea. You know, why build a nuclear reactor when you can use somebody else's tech who's building the nuclear reactor?
Well, don't you think it's smarter that you should know the nuclear reactor instead of somebody else doing the nuclear reactor? Because you never know how they're going to treat the nuclear reactor. What a world.
I think it's
okay,
crazy
that
we have three companies building nuclear reactors.
Okay. We started this show like 18 years ago, and there is absolutely no way I would have thought we'd be talking about the private ownership
no.
of nuclear reactors.
Right?
By the tech world.
Me.
Just to run servers.
Yeah, exactly. It's crazy. They should all come together and build one big thing themselves, but they're all building their own.
Well, I mean, because it takes, I mean, nuclear power is incredibly powerful, but only creates so much power. You maybe bet that they're eating so much power. Okay, moving right along. We got a huge, huge story, Grid, which is amazing, because you know what we're supposed to be doing this week? We're supposed to be recovering from SES Chicago. That's before Search Engine Strategies and shitified itself and faded back into the ether.
I love those conferences. They were
the
great.
First week of December was always SES Chicago. And the second week of December was always recovering from SES Chicago. And SES Chicago was special because for all the people who were on the old lecture circuit, the last show was Chicago. That was it. We were done.
Yeah, I remember. I went twice, I think. Yeah, it was great.
Such a fun.
Crazy time.
And Blues City. Such a fun town. Okay, so we're not recovering from SES Chicago. We're covering tons and tons of stories because things don't stop in the tech world like they used to.
No, they used to take the month of December off.
Yeah.
They took it off. Most of our employees got 3 and 4 weeks vacation, and they don't take it at the end of the year.
No, indeed. Huh? Well, anyway, so, and shitification is coming to Blue Sky, maybe.
I don't have a problem with this, though.
Blue Sky's growing. Blue Sky's growing really fast. And it's growing so fast, it needs to raise revenues quickly. Now, it doesn't want to become, like, driven by advertising and driven into grossness like everybody else who's come before it. But at the same time, it has to raise money. And so it's got a subscription service in mind. But, you know, think about it. Even at $8 a month, $10 a month, $12 a month, they've only got 25 million users. And how fast do you go through that kind of money in this kind of world?
Well, definitely. They're going to have a lot more subscribers for that model to work. But I do think they don't want to do ads. So the CEO said no ads, and they're trying to stay away from that. And ads, of course, is massive revenue. So, you know, I think, you know, the critique I read in the article was like people might not be, you know, wanting to subscribe. But I have a feeling because of the way the market is right now and how people are feeling about Twitter and even Facebook, because it was revealed last night that that Zuckerberg donated to some people that people might not like that he donated to. He donated a lot of money.
Oh, well, yeah, now it comes time to pay all the bills. And so private interest and wealthy people come and start giving politicians money to pay for that whole exercise in democracy that everyone just went through.
Yeah, so he put a lot of money there. And anyway, but people are trying to get away from all that, and they really like Blue Sky. So I have a feeling they're going to have a much larger subscription rate than if they were just like a regular social platform.
You know what? I'd pay 10 bucks, even 20 bucks a month to be there because I really like it there.
And the article said what I said last week, which is if they don't ruin the free part and try to force you into paying for things that you have to pay for so you can use the platform properly, because that won't work. But if you're like, hey, we'll let you do 5 minutes of videos, 5 minute videos, and that's $20 a month, most people are going to be like, shoot, 5 minute videos, $20 a month, I'm in. And they're not going to do verification, not going to do paid verification, thank goodness. Hopefully they bring back a real verification that you are who you are, because that was really helpful back before Musk got away. So it'll be interesting to see, but I'm excited to see what they're going to do. They do have some things with the platform they still need to fix as well, but overall it's been a good experience over there.
My worry is just that growth is going to exceed ability to pay for it all. And this isn't 2016. This isn't the years of exuberance in the tech market. This isn't a time when people are just throwing money hand over fist at new technology companies, especially Blue Sky all the money's being hoovered up by people who don't support Blue Sky. So anyway, I'm just worried about Blue Sky running out of runway before they're able to mature into a successful business model.
Yeah, it's definitely possible, especially with any startup, right? And they are technically still a startup. But I do think that there's so much positive vibe over there. And because the starter packs allow you to block accounts and masks that you do not want to have to talk to.
Yeah.
That's really helpful to bring down the identification factor. So I think it has a good chance as long as it's navigated well through these waters, because these are the waters where, you know, you can really mess up. But if the subscription fee is $10 or $20 a month and I can do like videos and I get like extra things, like I wrote them and said, we need bookmarking. There's no bookmarking over there, and that's really not good. So they're like, they're working on it. And if you made that part of the subscription, I probably wouldn't feel very positive. But if you're like, hey, you can bookmark, but we're going to put into your $20 a month package the ability to categorize all your bookmarks. Well, it's okay. It's like WordPress theory, right? You do the free version that has all the functionality, and then you add on to the functionality. Like Yoast, one of the things that made everyone use Yoast in the early days was that you couldn't change the H1.
Unless you did. That's right. I remember
and
that.
And the title, they were the same, right? And you had to pay for it to be able to change them. Well, you could do it that way, but it wasn't very helpful if you were doing SEO to have the title be the same as the H1. So you would pay them, of course, because I can now change all my, you know, titles and descriptions. And nobody else did that at that time. So so stuff like that. So I think they have a really good possibility. They just have to navigate it well. And if you're not on it, you guys should be on it because it's a really positive space. Like you can follow artists. They have like lists of artists, lists of journalists. So you can literally put into your panel that you want to see just these people for the day. Like you just want to look at the artists or the photographers or the authors or the books or whatever it happens to be. And then you go to your main feed where you see everybody that you follow.
It's an excellent system.
Yeah, it really is.
And it's still a place where civility seems to reign.
Yes. Yes, very much so.
Okay. Microsoft has axed Skype's credit and phone numbers. Credit and phone number. Sales to try to push subscription. So if you're still using Skype, when you're done updating your MySpace and checking the fax machine, I don't even know. I don't even know. When's the last time you used Skype? I can vaguely hear its noises in my head.
Yeah, you know, it's kind of crazy. Is it was like the only way to do those kind of calls at the time, and then Microsoft audit made some changes people didn't like, and now everyone uses something else and totally forgot it existed, except for the small amount of people that use it. There are people that still use it. It still has, you know, millions of users, not like down in the hundreds of thousands or anything, but
back
but, yeah.
In the old Webmaster Radio days, we religiously used Skype. It provided by far the best and clearest signal, and we had a commercial account, so we could hook up with people digitally or via the old phone system, and it was, you know, absolutely interoperable. And again, our producers swore by using Skype, and then suddenly they didn't. They didn't want nothing to do with it anymore.
Yeah, I think that's after Microsoft bought it because they made some changes that weren't really conducive to how people are using it. So yeah, so there's not much more to say. It's going to move to a SaaS model, and you're not going to be able to top off your credits. You'll have to do the SaaS version once they switch over. And I guess that's unfortunate because if you don't want to use it that month, you still got to pay for it that month. So
yeah, well, that's Word and Excel and all that stuff I used to use and don't use so much anymore. Okay, that's the old. This is the new. Google's Willow quantum chip called Willow. Wow. It's not a quantum computer. It's a quantum chip. I don't even know how many magnitudes of leap forward it is, but it's massive.
Yeah, and the qubits, it reminds me of that game way, way back in the day. I don't know if you remember Qubit. Anyway, that make up the high-powered chips are roughly the size of an atom and operate by the rules of quantum mechanics. So they pack a wallop of a punch. Now, again, they're not computers yet, and we have to weigh up our cybersecurity too before things start moving to quantum computers, because right now we can't protect against them breaking through every system that exists, really.
We do actually have quantum computers, and breaking through systems is the least of the things it'll be used for. Quantum computers are so incredibly powerful.
Right. When they go public, they're worried about people using them for hacking.
It's honestly the difference between a human being and somebody from the planet Krypton.
So from Fortune, the new chip can complete in 5 minutes a complex computation that would take the most powerful supercomputer today ten septillion years. I don't even know how big that is. I'd have to go look up.
Very. Yes. Too big to bother even thinking about it. So big.
More than the estimated age of the universe.
There you go.
Wrote Hartmut Nevin, the founder and leader of Google Quantum AI, in a blog post about it. So they'll also be able to prove for the first time the chip's errors did not increase proportionally as a number of qubits were added. So apparently there's been an issue in the past with quantum chips that when you add qubits, the little atom nodes, that errors can become much more frequent. And so they were able to fix that issue. It's prone to these mistakes because it's very sensitive to electromagnetic interference and other kinds of interference. Like, I'm sure, like, you know,
please remember, it's pulling septillions of more computations than a supercomputer is. A dust mote will screw stuff up.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
Okay, that's just. But anyway, we're actually closer to having quantum computer power, which incidentally sucks a lot less energy than classic computers and regular computers that, you know, are just big heat creating sources. So this is could potentially be a big step towards reducing a lot of pollution that goes into the ecosystem.
Yes, definitely. By the way, just for comparison, the last quantum chip that Google benchmark tests in 2019 could do the calculation in 200 seconds. That would take the supercomputer thousands of years, an hour or two, so 10 septillion years. So there's a difference between the two. So it's a major breakthrough. And we'll see how it works in the practical world.
Somebody did pose an interesting question on Reddit the other day. If Willow was able to solve a problem that would take several septillion years to solve, how do we know it's right?
That's true.
Seriously.
That's true. It did come up with an answer. It's sort of like large language models that may or may not be correct. No, we don't know. It might be just fine.
Computer's like, you know, I'm going to be here a septillion years from now, and you won't, so screw it. It's seven.
Exactly. So it's a major breakthrough. Everyone should go read about it at Google AI's website, their blog post today.
Okay, so Google is not only moving ahead with, you know what, there's no other stories after Willow. That should have been the last story we covered because it would impress us now, just thinking about it.
But before we cover this story, we got to go to the one before it because they're related.
Oh, did I jump one? Shoot.
Yeah.
You know what? Go for it. My head's already at the other one.
So Google launched a Gemini 2.0 Flash Experimental is what they're calling it. Well, don't let the engineers name things. Oh my gosh. Flash Experimental. But they went ahead and launched that. This week, it's going to be able to do. Now, I asked one of our experts on AI, who we have to have back on. Remember Gavin Klondike?
Yeah.
So Google is saying that it's thinking and reasoning, understands, it can hear, it can see, and it's able to make all this, you know, work all these things for you. Like it'll be a full, be able to do deep research for you. Like it'll be able to generate text and it'll be able to find things for you and look at things. But when it says things like think and stuff like that, it's actually not thinking like a human. And reasoning in AI language does not mean reason like a human. Just want to make sure people are clear on that. It's more like a chain of thought thing. It's like take step 1 and 2 and 3 and 4 and 10 and 20 and 30, and then you get to some sort of result. But it's not thinking like a human does. And just so as Google uses in the video, thinking like a human does, and that's not what it does. But anyway, so that is going to lead to the next story, which is I'm sorry, I skipped one too. We went to the Flash Experimental and then the deep research, and then we have one about agents.
before we get there, I wanted to check on something. The Flash Experimental, does this have anything to do with memory storage?
And not that I know of, no.
I hope Wozniak sues their asses off. I mean, he was so sensitive about the use of the word Apple in the past. I mean, I hope he just goes after them with like tooth. You know flash storage, eh?
Yes, of course, yeah.
Wozniak may or may not have actually invented it. I believe he did invent it, but he certainly innovated the hell out of it, and we have mass storage now because of him. mash super fast, and more importantly, not solid state storage because of him. And Google's naming this flash experimental. Like, what the hell? This is like we're already using that word for something.
I know. Well, they do that on bugs me. Their products lately.
I hate that. I really do. Honestly, it drives me nuts.
Yeah, because even Flash, right, was up something.
Flash means three things now.
The Wall Street Journal did a brief article about it, and basically it's making technology available to developers from Wednesday and said it will power AI-generated summaries in the company's namesake engine. We have a story on that. Mm-hmm. And then it's going to be generating text, images, and audio from a single application. And so it's the basis of basically, it's the next evolution in Gemini, which is going to be the basis of everything. And, so now we go to how they're going to be able to use that for deep research. I personally will still do my own research. I don't want a tool to do it for me because then I don't learn. But, the generative AI Gemini 2 is the most advanced model for them yet. And it's going to be the basis for things like agents. But it actually tends to give out overcomplicated answers to otherwise simple queries. So it does have a little bit of a drawback there. But it's still in the experimental phase. So don't expect it to be easily accessible. You can sign up for the pilot program, though. So this is from DeepMind, Deep Research. It prioritizes research and accuracy over actually giving you a fast answer. And it can take a long time, but it's supposed to be better to help people who do research. But it's Google AI Week because each one of these is building on the next one. So, and then we get to the big.
I'm looking forward to seeing what happens with deep research in the long run, especially in the big fields, quantum mechanics, oceanics, tectonics, even hydrology, figuring out how water flows. Figuring out climate models. I'm really interested in what deep research will bring to, democratizing a world of deep data. Then this next one is amazing and terrifies me at the same time. Project Mariner.
Yes. Me too. So go ahead.
Do you mind if I introduce this? Because I was actually.
Sure, go ahead.
How to say this? I wasn't, like many people, I've been working with a startup that isn't going to start up at all because of Project Mariner. A group of people working to make AI agents. The idea being the world is about to become incredibly complicated. Everything is going to be interactive with AI in one way or another. Your doctor, your senator or house representative talking to them. Dealing with the IRS or Revenue Canada or your tax collectors, medical stuff, everything is going to have some sort of AI function, and you're going to need to function with AIs to get by in society. It's going to be as important as having a mobile device or a computer is right now. But it's going to be insanely complicated, and most AIs are going to be run by other people, not you. They're going to be owned by other people, not you, and your life is going to be completely enmeshed in and run by them. So Google wants to bring AI agents directly to the people. Of course, they're going to own them. But set that aside for a moment. Project Mariner is all about an AI agent that will do tasks. You name it. Anything that is happening on the web, Project Mariner wants to be able to do for you. And this is where it gets weird and scary and amazing all at the same time. What do you think, Christine? Like, just the super agent, the agent to do things for all agents.
Yeah, the article that I read today is from BGR. And one of the big things they talk about here is privacy issues, because they know everything you do, right? They don't say what they're going to do with that information. We know they're going to train on it. There's no way they're not going to train on it. But, you just went to a site that maybe you don't want everybody in the world to know you went to. And not that they're going to broadcast it, but doesn't mean it doesn't go into your Google profile somewhere, or they don't learn from it, or they don't anonymize it, even though anonymization can usually be broken.
Into a world where morality is directly being legislated at the state and federal level. So I don't know what a large corporation is, large tech corporation is going to do with its information either, but I would be worried.
So the example they use in the article is NASA Project Mariner to find contact emails for a list of companies for a spreadsheet. That's a great example, it says, of what AI agents will be good for.
You can get ChatGPT to do that too.
Well,
they can. You can. You actually can. Sorry.
I can't analyze anything, so maybe not. I do this tedious research job all the time while browsing the web. It's also time consuming as we need to visit various websites, scroll, click, and save information. So the Project Mariner demo does that. It goes for 12 minutes and it goes and finds all this information and it puts it in a sheet. And Google says it's going to help, protect you by it only works if the tab is open. That's kind of going to, that's not going to take off because I can't have a tab open for 12 minutes and do nothing else. And then it's going to try to prioritize user instructions over third-party attempts at prompt injection so it can identify potentially malicious instructions from external sources and prevent misuse. I'm sorry. I go to DEF CON every year. They hack their GIP computers. I do not have confidence. So let's just say this takes off. I have very many reasons that this will not take off. People didn't even trust credit cards online until 2000. I think it was 14. Like, the web had been out for 14 years and 16 years, and people were still, the graphic web. And we're still afraid of using their credit cards. So the idea that this agent is just going to do stuff, like go to your bank account and pay for stuff and put stuff in a cart. People didn't take on. Remember, Amazon tried to do that a little bit with their little buttons. And you let it do stuff for you, and it would order. And then, like, a kid accidentally ordered, like, $10,000 worth of goods one day kind of stuff. So there's a lot of roadblocks, I think, for this becoming massively adopted. But let's just say it isn't massively adopted. Everyone loves it. They all use it. Well, as soon as it becomes something that a lot of people use, it becomes a hacking target. That would be my first fear, is hacking target, because they just have to get on your computer and make it look like they're you, on, be the admin, or if you don't have your computer locked down. So then it looks like it's coming from you, so therefore Google's security there wouldn't.
No, of course, for sure. I mean, this is wide open for monkey in the middle or for an injection attack.
Exactly. So most people's computers at home are only secured by, like, an antivirus. And something on there. Most routers aren't.
A free antivirus at that.
Yeah, because I went to look for routers twice in the last 8 years, and both times there was almost no routers on the market that didn't have some sort of security vulnerability. So you're talking about someone gets on your router, pretends they're you, and now they can set the agent off and go through your bank accounts. And so until I know that they can't do that, which I don't think is ever really possible, I would never probably put one of these on my computer. And then the privacy, like we just said, the privacy is a huge issue because now they're going to know everything that you do and what they do with that data. We may not know because they're not always honest about that.
Here's the deal. You want Star Trek? Privacy is the price of Star Trek. It totally is. Remember the Star Trek computer knew where everybody was at any given time?
It doesn't have to be. They can literally not record that data or dump it within 24 hours.
Well, yes and no. But if your medical data has to update every time you do a transaction with some server to get a prescription updated, that's going to... Think of how important image caching is right now, just in making websites load quickly. Data record, like medical data records are much bigger. So, I mean, there's a whole host of reasons why privacy is, we might have to have a whole different relationship with it, which means a different relationship with society in general. But, hey, humans evolve. I'm not saying it's good or bad.
Or we can just reject it and not use it.
But we won't. Because the world's about to become so insanely complicated. Maybe Mariner's the wrong direction. It's terrifying in a whole bunch of ways, but people aren't going to be rejecting AI. It's not going to happen. Then they're going to need something to interact with it for them. There's no question about that.
We'll put the dollar bet, but next year this time it probably hasn't advanced a whole lot.
I don't think it will by next year. I don't think it will by next year either. I think it's going to take around 5 years, but 5 years from now, I mean – forgetting the maelstrom that's coming about a month from now, just if tech was to continue exactly on the course it is right now, without the major weirdness that's about to come, which we really need to talk about sometime.
January.
Yeah, I don't want to talk about it then either. But it's, you know, I don't see people not adopting the push button convenience of blinking at something and making it happen.
We'll see.
And that will involve agents.
I think they're going to reject agents generally, yeah, unless they can be hidden. Unless the agent just does it and you don't know what's going on.
Oh, it's all hidden. Maybe. That's half the point to Mariner. Is happens.
Your tab has to be open. You have to watch
the tab.
Your
tab has
stuff.
To be open. Sure. Yeah. I mean, I got Facebook open there somewhere.
I mean, the tab has to be open and open at, no, I don't mean open. I mean, it has to be the front tab.
Okay. So that'll be loaded on my cell phone sitting on my desk.
We'll see. We're tech people think differently than regular folk. So we'll see. Okay. We'll see what happens.
Last week's show.
No, we're going into the Sundar thing. I said we don't have to say a lot because he didn't actually say much.
Last week's show we called "The Changes Will Intensify Until Morale Improves."
Yes.
And sort of happens that Sundar Pichai agrees and went into a interview this time with the New York Times to tell us about how much things are going to change profoundly. And if you want to watch the video, there's a YouTube link, which we're going to be throwing up into Blue Sky in the coming days when this podcast is announced. But I think if you go to YouTube, type in Google CEO or Sundar Pichai, Andrew Ross Sorkin, or New York Times, you'll get the interview. What do you think, Christine? Was there anything in here that people should be specifically looking for?
Sundar often does talks and wishes and dreams. So he talks about like the history of how they've done so much with large language models, BERT and MOM, and then Transformers, and then AI overviews, which reach a billion people, which is, you and I both know, means impressions, not actual use. So he didn't talk about use, he talked about impressions. And he talks about how great search is, and we all know from just what we see out there, not just us as SEOs, that search has not been improving. It's been getting worse. And we know he meant to get it worse because he made money off it. That's in DOJ testimony. So I don't know. It doesn't say a whole lot. It just says it's going to change profoundly in the next year. And everything we just talked about is what he's probably going to make those changes on. So we'll see what happens. I don't have a lot of confidence in him, to be honest. I don't think he's done a lot of good things for Google search. They make more money on ads, but that's just because they keep hiding them. You know, they're at the top. Now they're in the middle. Now they're in the endless scroll. Now they're... Now there's four, now there's three, now there's two, now there's 10.
You see the future, right? Ultimately, they're going to be making money on ads because that's going to be the trustable click.
That's true. Very true. So I don't think
there's a lot. That's 2 or 3 years down the road. Just no question about that in my mind.
This is more like a marketing, you know, we're awesome speech. There's not a lot to it. So I don't think people are going to spend a lot of time on it.
Yeah.
Google is testing AI powered overviews and search again. This is where we get the 2 billion, the 1 billion people has reached 1 billion people. Mm-hmm. So if it had been used by a billion people, then he would have said that. But he said it reached a billion people. It's showing up from some studies I saw today online. They're not in here today. On about 40% of search results. So it's been increasing again. It went way down for a while. Now it's increasing again. Some people like it. Some people don't like it. You know, I still think featured snippets were better. They're easier. They're more accurate. So, I don't know. What do you think, Jim?
It really, I'm still of the same opinion. It really depends on what you're searching for, how you're searching, and what information you're trying to get. You said something a little bit earlier. You like doing your research because you learn as you go along, and I'm kind of old school that way as well. Now, the research I do is at a very small scale relative to what Google's talking about when they talk about deep research. I don't necessarily like having the story written for me. I like ferreting out the facts myself. Although in some cases, I honestly don't care how accurate a biography on Neil Young is when I honestly just want to really quickly get some salient facts about his life and don't want to go chasing through a bunch of web pages when I'm writing my own essay. I'm researching the history of Great Britain. I don't want to go through a whole bunch of websites so that I can write two sentences. The AI overviews are quite useful. Now, I know a great deal about the history of Great Britain, so if I see something that's hinky in that content, I'm educated. I've put the time in. I know to go and re-research that point. And this is what frightens me about AI overviews. Not everybody, and I know this sounds terrible. I mean, I'm so educated, no one else is. I don't mean to sound like that. But I will trust AI overviews on a topic I'm incredibly informed on, because I'm able to spot statements that may or may not be true, and then go research them myself. So, yeah, I think AI review should come with a disclaimer, but in some cases they're really useful. In some cases, I wouldn't use them at all. I would prefer to look for expert content written by an expert in contiguous sentences, because that's how they intended to write it.
Yeah, that's basically how I wrote a quick post on Blue Sky today, saying that if I don't know the topic and you post an informative post and you say it was written by a GPT, I don't read it. And I feel the same about AI overviews, you know, because it can be wrong. I don't know if it's wrong. I just might as well go search for the actual articles that it's pulling from anyway. So I agree with you there. So, moving on.
This one's interesting, eh? I thought you were our friend, Fabrice. So is Bing trying to put SEOs out of business by giving them even more detailed audit advice than Google does?
No, this is more just like summarizing the data that's in your Webmaster Tools. They still call them Webmaster Tools. So if the image that's in Barry's article at SE Roundtable just shows how it will like try to summarize it for you, what it's looking at. I don't know. I mean, yeah, it's definitely probably helpful for some people, but it just allows people to pose like they know stuff that they don't know. So I don't know if it's good if you're using it for auditing and understanding your website.
Yeah, but, don't do that. Like go through every yeah. chart, like, fine-tooth comb, look at the numbers, try to figure out why you have X number of impressions and X number of clicks on these. I mean, there's the detail is the devil. Go for it. Look for the detail.
Yeah, because it has like a whole bunch of, like, they're really long, and they're probably just taken from their Copilot engine, which is basically Bing search. And then they're telling you about what your data is, but it doesn't analyze, so I never quite know how it does that. Like, I ask AI people, and they're like, it doesn't. It just predicts the text, and it's trying to be right based on what you've fed it. But still, it doesn't mean that information is correct. So if you go through it, and you're like, hey, this is correct, and you just want to copy and paste it, send it, you know, to your boss, hey, whatever. But just be careful. Don't use it as, like, a cheat for auditing, or if you don't understand your data, don't rely on this completely, because it may or may not be correct. But they're putting a lot of information in there.
Yeah, so, well, yeah. I looked at the image that was in SE Roundtable, and my first thought was, oh my goodness, are you actually trying to put SEOs out of business? Because it was just so much detail. It did look like a reliable audit document, but again, just be really cautious. There's not a heck of a lot of analysis that goes into that audit, but a real SEO audit will have. Most of the time in the audit process is actually analysis.
So, yeah, exactly. Yeah, and just summarizing stuff with an engine that may or may not be correct is not great data. It's a good starting point if you need to try to understand your data better and to go look at it from there. But don't take the results being the end-all of auditing your website or looking at your data. So the next thing Google talked about, totally different topic. Difference between clustering and canonicalization. This is sort of addition to the black hole conversation we had last week, how things can wind up in a black hole. So basically, clustering is when they take pages that they think are similar enough together, and the canonicalization happens when they decide that it should go to another canonical. Like, when it's like Google decided this is your canonical, that's where that comes from.
The canonical is the best possible version of the page. Which is often the original version of the page, but the canonical is the best one, the one that should be getting the energy, all the energy.
Correct. So you want to take a look if you see that these pages are being redirected to another canonical. Take a look at the pages that are all being redirected to that canonical through Google. The redirection is a soft redirection. And then check the pages and make sure that they're not all talking about the same thing. And if they are, then you're going to have to either make them different enough that they're separate, or you're going to have to like reduce it down to the one, or just leave, change the canonical to the page Google selected if it's the right choice.
Now, if you want to see a immediate example of clustering, go to Google Search Console and look at Core Web Vitals. Choose an issue in Core Web Vitals and click on the example URL it gives you. Off to the right of the screen, you're going to see the right or the left, whichever, wherever stuff opens up. You're going to see I always get my rights and left messed up. You're going to see a window open that shows pages similar to the example URL that you clicked. Those are a group of pages that Google looked at and said, "Hey, these are all relatively yes, the same. We're going to put them all in one big basket and do some tests on them because they're representative of the page."
Yeah, and sometimes they could just be an issue, and other times it could be what we're talking about here is clustering before they do the canonicalization. And the crawling tools like Screaming Frog and Sitebulb will show you when Google has picked another canonical. So you can actually crawl your whole website and then look through the spreadsheet and see where they've actually changed your canonical and then cluster your pages together.
It's funny, when you first looked at the story, you thought, oh, you know, the difference between clustering and canonicalization, this is going to be a nothing story. Then you actually really look into it.
Yeah.
There's some real detail in here, right? Because it's hard to really explain in relation to each other, given how the canonical page can be chosen by Google.
Yeah, exactly. And this is from Search Off the Record, and I highly advise everyone listen to the most recent Search Off the Record, because they really get into some major details of what we're talking about right now. And then we also know from that Search Off the Record that Google has 40 signals for canonicalization. So like if you redirect, do a 3-1 redirect, well, then they're that canonical, right? They're going to go to the page you redirect to. But even HTTP and HTTPS can make a difference for canonicalization. They might pick
absolutely something. Of course it should.
Yeah. Yeah. So there's up to 40 signals. So yeah. John joked that we're going to write up, you know, SEO documents about the 40 signals, like we did the 200 ranking signals. But anyways,
one of the first things you teach a new technical SEO, like the first day they're sitting down and go, "I'm interested in technical SEO," is the four unique aspects of a URL.
Very true. Because I still find pages or sites where the HTTP, HTTPS, WW, non-WW for both hasn't been properly redirected.
Mm-hmm. Oh, and don't forget backslash, no backslash.
Yeah, exactly. And sometimes index HTML is still there and it's treated as a separate page. Like the home page can have like 6-8 different versions. Also, XDefault as a canonicalization signal is very strong. They talk about it for probably a few, like 3 to 5 minutes on there. And it's not used a lot, but when XDefault is used, it is definitely a signal to go to the other canonical.
It's complicated. I mean, it's not as simple as, I mean, you'd think it should be really, and 99 times out of 100, it is quite simple, but then it isn't.
Yes, and they also try to handle the broken canonical. So if your canonical isn't correct, like I found one the other day that had other code in the canonical tag, other attributes, which you can't have. Or if your canonical is not absolute and it's relative, things like that, they will try to fix it. So the person talking on Search Off the Record, Alan, goes way down the rabbit hole on these items. And I surely suggest, especially if you do technical SEO, that you listen to this and listen to it several times, because it's got a lot of really deep information about how your pages could be misinterpreted by Google, especially when it comes to canonicals and clustering. Another Google thing this week. It was actually the announced the day after we did, later in the day after we did our podcast last week. They add FAQs for site reputation abuse policy. Dr. Pete, from Moz, I don't know if everyone knows Dr. Pete, but Dr. Pete's on Blue Sky, and, it's just Dr. Pete, and he put out a simple diagram for you to analyze your site and when you're likely to get a manual action for reputation abuse. Because they're not targeting affiliates. I know that's a common misconception right now, but they are targeting the type of site, the type of hosting, and the type of control the site has over the third-party content. So they have a new FAQ. It has 9 items in it, like, what is third-party content? Does freelance content violate the site reputation abuse policy? Does affiliate content violate the site reputation abuse policy? No. So things like that. So I would advise everyone to read it. It's a little bit too much for us to cover here because you'd have to cover every item in depth.
But so it's, for the record, Google has – this is Google saying it nicely. When Google puts out a directive like this, they just came out with, like, you know, 9 new additions to their FAQs. So this is them saying it nicely. Think on that for a little bit. If they've smashed Forbes, they beat on Fortune, they took out USA Today. They I forget who else they punched in the face, but they really weren't scared of, like, punching really major. WSJ, they hit the Wall Street Journal in the face, did they not?
Yeah, and Forbes, too.
So this is them saying it nicely. comply, kid. That's in the words of Google, but I'm sort of paraphrasing.
Yeah, pretty much. That's what they did.
Don't use your website to boost I don't know, whatever snake oil pills are snake oil pill de jour, because that will affect all the good stuff you're trying to put out.
And the FAQ also covers the recent change to a first-party site with their own content. There are ways that can be negative, too. So it also tells you how to fix to reapply for the menu action.
So I don't want to go way down the rabbit hole on this one, but I got to ask, now that you mention it, people buying up old domains. That's exactly what this covers.
You definitely have to be careful of that. They've been saying that for a long time, but yeah, it is part of it.
And now they're kind of saying it like. And anyway, yeah, I think this is Google putting its foot down for the final time, because I really see the hammer of God coming down and like this time Hulk smashing stuff. Okay, Google Crawler documentation as HTTP caching.
Yeah, so if you have HTTP, I'm sorry, go ahead. As I say, if it's HTTP 1 or HTTP 2, which one are they going to choose? But when do they switch protocols? Things like that. That's what this one covers.
Yeah. So Google has put in documentation on HTTP caching.
Yeah, truly technical stuff.
No, I mean it saves. I'm trying to think here. How is this of great benefit to most webmasters? Because it saves micro bits of resources when you're covering massive sites. But for a regular small site, just like Google, do a thing.
But they also added e-tags to the documentation. How many times have you seen e-tag? I'm like, what is that? e-tags are like a last modified response header, but they're a little bit more definite and they're required by the HTTP standard. So they recommend they use those instead of the last modified headers to indicate caching preference. E-tag doesn't have date formatting issues that the other caching can. So people should read the documentation, especially if you're a technical SEO. If you just do content, you probably can skip this one. So where do we go next?
There was big change in link counts in Search Console. If you see a big jump in links and you're kind of feeling weird about reporting that to your clients because you can't explain why, Google's reporting links differently.
Yeah, and they're reporting more of them, according to Barry, who showed screenshots of his link counts. So they're increasing the link counts in there. I don't use it a whole lot, but I do use it to get a general idea if I need to do a deeper dive. So that can be helpful.
Okay, so we're by the way, we are going. We're slightly over time now, and I can feel the studio stomping its foot. So, okay,
we'll do these last ones, and then I will run through the quick stories.
This one is kind of funny. Google saying sometimes over optimization drifts towards SEO spam, which makes me sound like they're talking like Canadians by like completely understating something, like completely understating. Hey, I think it's getting cold out now, when it's actually like -30. So if you over optimize a website, say you keyword stuff, and people are looking at the website and they see the same word over and over and over again, or maybe they discover that white on white wording, that's spam.
Yeah, and they don't have a definite threshold, John was saying to the person who asked the question in Webmaster Hours. But it's basically like, I had a site the other day that had 87, they repeated their keyword 87 times on one page. And it wasn't a lot of content on that page. And it was like 30 times in the nav and like 20 times on the footer. That is spam. And so that goes all the way back to Penguin and even probably before that. Cause Penguin wasn't just about links when it was launched. It was about other things too. And one of them was over optimization. So just, you know, write like normally and make sure you don't repeat your word. If you have like, 10 things in your nav that are a category of the same thing, then just put the title, the header of that nav column as the thing and then just put the individual words below it. Don't repeat it over and over and over again. So over optimization is not good.
This is one of those, I don't know what porn is, but I know it when I see it sort of things.
Yeah. Yeah.
But come on, you guys know when you're spamming. You know when you're doing it. You absolutely know when you're doing it. You can't not know when you're doing it.
Yeah, and it's not helping you because repeating it doesn't matter anymore. It actually is a negative. Like I know back in like 15 years ago, you might repeat it a lot to get Google to pick you up, but that's not how it works anymore. And repeating over and over again a keyword or stuffing, never stuff alt tags. I got another site that did that too this week. Never stuff alt tags because they have a secret devaluation for that that they don't tell you about, but does exist because I've recovered sites from it.
There's a special place in hell for somebody who stuffs their alt tags, let me tell you.
Yes, exactly, exactly. So just make sure you're not over-optimizing. And we got a new Search Console feature. Yay!
Well, kind of. I mean, yay, if they ever get it right.
Well, you will be able to see. They changed the date picker, so now you can just click on 7 days, click on 30 days, or click on 24 hours. It'll be in your time zone's time, and it will show you the data for the last 24 hours.
Okay, which is cool and everything, except that data is not fully collected. So you're looking at this data, and you're looking at half of the days, half the days.
That's true.
And so the very first time you see it, you're going to have a minor heart attack. That's not actually Google's count. That's not even their, like, partial fresh data count. I don't know what the hell that is. That's mega partial. That's what we're calling
just,
it. Mega
partial. Remember, it's partial and not completely current. Just like when you looked in analytics and their hourly view was never, if you're like within the last couple hours, it hasn't updated yet completely.
I think it's cool that they are showing those, the hourly blips. Cause I really value that. There's a bunch of different ways you should value that. But I wish they would collect and store and make that data available for successive days because it's only available for the 24-hour period you're looking at. It's not available for yesterday, the day before, or last week. And I really want to know. Honest to goodness, I really want to know. I'm so curious about this now.
By the way, it also works in Discover and News. You could just click the one date, but then that's just a pain. So, yeah, I agree.
And lastly,
they're not making it – oh, real quick. They're not making it available in the API yet. So it's only available right now in Google Search Console.
Lastly, when this was introduced on Monday or Sunday, was there a data hiccup? Did you receive a data hiccup?
I do believe I had a data hiccup, but I don't know if it was official.
So did it have anything to do with this, or is that just coincidental? Because this is...
Most of the web was down yesterday, like off and on all day, so it could have been related to that too.
Well, no, there was big problems with Microsoft Teams and Office products.
No, I mean, I looked at Down Detector, everything was down. Yeah, everything was down yesterday, day before, for a period of time. Yeah, I was losing my connection to cable and everything all day yesterday. So,
we got to keep moving.
Yeah, let's do these last two ones, and I'll rush through the last ones because they're real simple.
Okay, so Google assessing the ability to track prices, share and save products you're looking at in Google Search and Google Shopping. It's a Google's adding track price and share and save buttons. They'll appear after you click on an individual product within Google search results. This is kind of cool, except you're going to be getting push notifications via email for stuff.
Yeah, so make sure it's something you really want to know about. But you can track price. Remember how when they first put in the track your airline price? Like a company developed that and then Google took it and then I don't know where it is now.
Yeah.
But it's kind of the same idea. They'll be able to track the price if it changes. And then you can save it for later, and you can also share it with somebody that maybe you're helping to shop for. So I think it's a good feature. It does offer a lot more clutter to the page, though. I think Google's getting a little overrun with clutter. But it is a nice feature. I think it'll be helpful. I like something Google did.
I hate push notifications. Oh, my God. I get drowned in them. And this is
something
I think people wouldn't adopt. And damn it, do it automatically for me, damn it.
Just make sure it's like, or do a filter. Once you know where it's coming from, just do a filter and have them go there. So, Google's also moving on to Google Business, since we're talking about business stuff. Google has added more types of hours for your business listing. In the past, it's just been access, drive through, pickup, brunch, senior hours, delivery, takeout. Now they're going to have like happy hours and prayer, and there's quite a few religious ones in here. Online service hours, like we have worship service, Sabbath, Mass, Juma. I don't know what that is. I feel badly. Things like that. But they also added happy hours, takeout, breakfast. There's confession in there too.
Now, do they have the great crossover tools that I know Ask.com would have had if they were still in the playing, like, you know, churches you can go to confession and drink in at the same time?
I don't know, but
they
you
should.
can, you can click on more than one of these buttons, so maybe somebody will offer that. At Catholic Church, we do have wine. I don't go anymore, but when I was younger. So that's all our, now it's just our fast stories. These are pretty quick. I can just jump through them. If you need to jump in, Jim, just go ahead.
Oh, go. We need to get out of here.
Yeah.
Honest to goodness, studio's going to kill us.
I know they are. We are. We talked a lot today. There's a lot of big stuff. So much AI news. Officially Bing has dropped the cache link. So like Google dropped the cache link, you can only look at a cached version of a result in Microsoft, but you can go to their webmaster tools and you can look at it in there if you need to look at the cached version. So that's good. Google doesn't offer that option. That's where we said Google should have put it, in the webmaster tools.
See, Fabrice does love us after all.
He does. Fabrice is awesome. Google tests trending and popular labels and search results. This is like the fifth change. It's just underneath the search. It says people like this, and they keep changing the words. So now it's popular is the new word. Popular with people. It's right under the name of the company on the
popular
title.
Popular with popular people.
Exactly. Google tests site links with arrow down to show more. So you know you get those little bullet pills now for site links underneath the site instead of just the words, which I don't like because they take up a lot of space, but now they're going to do two rows, and you'll be able to click on an arrow button to open up the second row to see the extra site link buttons. We'll see if the people even use it. Google Search Console legacy tools has been removed. So anything you're using in legacy tools reports, like ad, they had the ad, what was it called? The ad experience report and abusive experiences, that is all gone. You might be able to find it somewhere else, like the disavow tool. You can search for it, but it's not in Search Console anymore. We're not sure about that. They haven't gotten clarification, but at this time, if you do not see Search Console legacy tools, you know why. Google Search Console's insights removes Google Analytics data, which is probably why we're now getting that other data that we just talked about in Search Console, the 24-hour data, because they removed the merge between the two, so you no longer can get both. And then the last one is Google has changed the tools design in Search. When you click on tools and you don't just get now the little drop down arrows on the left, you get this big honking thing on the right. Again, I think it's just too much clutter, but it might be useful. I haven't used it yet, so they may have more definitions in there for you to do stuff with tools. So we'll see how that goes. And that's it.
Yeah. It's by the way, interesting. It's kind of like the environment you find in GA4 now when you want to make changes to various elements of the metrics. You get that whole toolbar that scrolls out from the right. Same sort of difference. But yes, we've gone through it all. We've gone through 38 major stories today. That's pretty kind of cool. That might even be a record. On our second last podcast of the year, this was recorded live to podcast on the 12th of December, 12/12/2024. On behalf of Christine Schattenkirk from Sites Without Walls, this is Jim Hatcher from Digital Always Media. Folks, tune in to next week's podcast. We're going to have an all-star cast panel.
Folks, it's
going to be fun. Folks have been around the internet for a long time, and more importantly, folks who bring their insights to the public in one way or another, year after year after year after year and month after month. So next week's going to be a great deal of fun. Next week is also going to be our last broadcast in 2024. We're going to be taking a two-week break moving into the new year, and we will be back on the, probably on the 2nd of January. Oh, my goodness. Maybe the
9th.
We'll see.
Okay,
we'll see.
Second.
That's probably up to the studio, who's very angry at us right now. So we'll see.
And we just want to thank Jenny. Kind of took a step back from the industry for a little while, So this is like her like first big appearance in some time. So I bet she has a lot of great stuff to share with us that she's been holding back this last year. She was she pulled back when she was working on major full-time
jobs. She just hasn't been putting herself out there, but she's still been working.
Yeah. Oh no, yeah, definitely. No, but she was working this major job that took up all her time. That's why people haven't heard from her as much. So.
Okay. On behalf of Kristen Jackson from Sites Without Walls, it's Jim Hedger of Digital Always Media. Y'all been listening to Webcology, recorded live to podcasts on WMR.FM on the 12th of December, 2024. Be kind, be good to each other, rank well. Thank you to everybody involved from the studio to the office and folks and our sponsors, of course, and folks, we will talk to you next week.
Bye, everybody. Thank you, Ricky.
We get it. After all the frustration, the endless cycles of hoping for a system that actually works, you're ready for something steady. Something that delivers without constant workarounds or headaches. That's why we're excited to introduce the 2025 redesign of the Buzz CRM. Built with you in mind, it's more intuitive, faster, and smarter than ever. Finally, a CRM that sees your worth, streamlines your workflows, and gives you the tools to thrive without needing to prove yourself over and over again. Because you deserve a lifeline after all those outdated platforms. You deserve a system that keeps up with your goals and grows with your success. This isn't just a redesign, it's a revolution. Visit thebuzzcrm.com today. That's thebuzzcrm.com.